future of Go.com. He saw no way out of the financial morass, and he was tired of arguing about it with Eisner. "Let me be blunt about this," Bornstein said. "We cannot compete and win." The portal strategy was a failure. Go.com was never going to be another Yahoo or AOL. It was a hodgepodge of internet assets that Disney had cobbled together on the cheap. Building a portal was a flawed objective carried out with a poor strategy, he argued. Bornstein argued again that Disney should maintain its websites as line extensions of its various brands, ABC, ESPN, the Disney Channel, the theme parks, but abandon the idea of a portal and a separate internet division. Bornstein knew this was the equivalent of corporate suicide. After the meeting, Peter Murphy came up to him. "I've never seen anyone at Disney show that kind of courage or conviction," he said. Bornstein wasn't looking for protective cover. This was his conclusion, and he was ready to take responsibility for it. He knew it wasn't what Eisner wanted to hear. He had done what he could for Go.com, but he wasn't going to remain in a hopeless quest. He knew his future at Disney was probably doomed, no matter how successful he'd been at ESPN. Disney was not a culture where anyone could admit defeat and expect to survive. His relationship with Eisner was already damaged. Now, it was probably beyond repair. In a public concession of defeat, Disney exchanged the tracking stock for regular Disney shares in January 2001. In its own way, Disney's failure marked the end of internet euphoria and the stock market bubble that accompanied it. It was the first major concession of what was becoming obvious but still unspoken. For all its promise, the internet was yielding few business models that made any sense. Go.com tracking stock ceased trading on January 29th. The NASDAQ composite average had hit an all-time peak 10 months before, in March 2000. In the ensuing months, the bottom fell out of the technology sector as a whole, and the internet segment in particular. AOL Time Warner was especially hard hit, fully vindicating Eisner's belief that Time Warner had exchanged valuable hard assets for a grossly inflated stock. Although Eisner had long argued that chief executives should be measured by what they did, the movies they greenlit, the TV pilots they bought, as opposed to the things they turned down, rebuffing an offer from AOL was arguably Eisner's best decision of the decade, since the consequences would have been ruinous. Still, it is faint praise to say that things could have been worse. The AOL Time Warner disaster didn't change the fact that Eisner, too, had been seduced by the promise of the internet. Disney had squandered the assets it built up in Starwave to buy InfoSeek at the peak of the market, and had poured more millions into trying to make the unwieldy combination work. Ultimately, Disney's foray into the internet cost it over $1 billion on paper, and when it bought back the Go Network's shares, Disney had to take a write-down of $790 million. Somewhat to Bornstein's surprise, Eisner said he didn't want him to leave the company. Despite the optimism about ABC in his letter to shareholders and his decision to make Iger president with primary responsibility for ABC, Eisner was nervous about the network's faltering prime-time development and its dependence on a single hit, Millionaire. So he asked Bornstein to assume a new position